on the road declaring our independence, now in Manchester. We're at the Quill that they call, I'm not sure they call it the Quill, and we're going to find out. We're talking to Patrick Binder.
Hello.
Now, Patrick is, I first met in like 5-6 years ago at Pork Fest. Then he and his family went to the Jackalope Freedom Festival, came down, stayed at our home, just hung out there. And we have a lot of common friends and so on. And my first impression of Patrick is he's just way too smart. I'm going, what the heck is he doing on Freedom Walkabout? There is something going on that I knew was very interesting. He's an attractive young man with an attractive young wife and an awesome kid. A lot of the guys know him, Archer. He is just at any of the festivals, he's his own guy. It's like his parents is his roommates and he's out doing business. He's like, how many dogs you want walked? I mean, I need some money. So this has been awesome to watch. And I wanted to get to know him better when I found out that he had made the permanent move to New Hampshire, part of the Free State Project, and here at the Quill, or they, what do they call it now? That place or the place or something?
Yeah, I mean, the name's the Quill, but that place is like a secret reference name, right?
That place.
If you don't want to say the Quill out loud, you can say that place.
Okay, yeah. That place. Well, you were a board member, and I thought, I come to find out that, well, maybe talk a little bit more about the structure, but basically, interested people that wanted it to continue knew that it needed to have some kind of structure to protect liability from, and you have an LLC that owns the building that leases it to, and you have a board that runs yada, 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 yada. But the bottom line was, is you got elections that have now evolved into a ranked choice voting kind of thing that Patrick was on the board last year. So this year he decided, he's doing some other stuff. Neither will I, seek or accept the nomination of. But
yeah, I did my time.
Yeah, I did my time. So it was, he's made the move here. But I am a young, smart, principled family that was on Walkabout trying to find the place to settle and raise their children. I'm going, this is an interesting story. So that's what we're going to do with Patrick Binder. Now, introduce yourself and what you think is pertinent information, but I'm going to go back to your first memories at three. Who made you this freedom-oriented individual? Was a grandmother, an uncle, parents, grandfather, grandmother, coach, teacher, employer, kid, family,
sure,
business,
sure.
What? I mean, I need to know the basis to get a baseline.
All right,
for
so,
when you get here, and tell me the whole story, and I'll be quiet, turn down my mic, go.
All right, well, first I'm going to say it's the last name's Binder. Really, I mean, I would say the thing that turned me towards libertarianism was I was raised a conservative Catholic family in San Diego, and I was figuring it out, especially through religion, that they were lying to me. I had no sense of spirituality. And so I was like, these guys are just lying to me. Like, I don't think anything that they're telling me is real. And so then I started realizing that that also applied to government and all these rules that they had for how we should live our life. And so I didn't know what to think. I remember actually I rejected Catholicism. I rejected politics for some time. Kind of got into politics with the hope and change with Obama. I was like, oh yeah, man, he's going to change something. But then once Obama didn't do anything, I was just totally like, okay, now all politicians, like it's 3 months into his presidency, I thought, politics is totally not the way to go. This guy was able to get into power on just lying his way in. So I was like, not paying attention to politics, which was unfortunate because in 2011, folks like yourself and so many others were telling everyone about Ron Paul, and I was like, I don't do politics, so that was unfortunate because I missed getting into libertarianism a bit earlier. But basically I was just trying to find the truth. Everyone was lying to me, and I kept looking for what makes sense. And when I learned about non-aggression, self-ownership, I'm like, well, that all makes sense. That sounds like something that's just based in reason and logic, not based in
spirituality. Okay, where did you learn that from?
Where did I learn it from? So I would say the internet. So I think first I got beat up by cops in 2009. I just kind of jumped by a bunch of cops.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, something is the switch.
Something switches it. Yeah. Well, so, think Obama had just been elected, and then I had just written off politics a year earlier, and then I get jumped by, agents of the government, and I think, and All right. So not only are the, is the politics not work, like these guys aren't even on our side. They don't give a shit about us. So I started watching more like, you know, anti-cop stuff, just, you know, the, I think Adam Kokesh calls it like cop porn or something like that. The people getting beat up by police, basically.
Yeah. Pete Iyer and a demo and cop block.
All that kind of stuff. Exactly.
So, you want to share why they pounded on you? You just, what?
It was like the wrong place, wrong time. But then also I, you know, I'm, when a cop tells me to go away and I'm watching something, I go, no, I'm going to watch for a minute. And that was not the right thing to say to them. And so they jumped me. And then thankfully my buddy, Mike, you know, he's got my back always. So he jumped them. And that was probably, it was a good move, but, it got us both arrested. But basically we said no when they said go away. But there's 20 cops.
What was the end result of that? You were charged, you went through the process. In the end, what?
They were charging us with like this thing called lynching. Which is like trying to like stop an arrest or something like that. They're charged, which is not what we did. We just asked him what was going on because it was a lot of cops and one guy on his knees and just didn't look right. So, but we ended up taking a plea for, a three month, well, with no conditions because they had nothing on us, but like they had already drained me of, you know, like $10,000. So, of legal fees. So finally I got him to take a plea. They wanted it to be 3 months with no arrest. And I told him that's bullshit because I got arrested for no reason to begin with. And so they said, okay, 3 months, no conditions, basically.
Just no conditions.
Like 3 months later, they dropped it. So I pled like, you know, I did the plea bargain.
Plea and then of three,
what? That, you know, you plea like no contest or whatever, and they can get their
conviction,
you know,
rate.
You know, yeah, their conviction rate up kind of thing. And then 3 months later, it gets expunged because... because that was the plea deal.
But as
they had nothing on
experienced. See, this is what I'm looking for. Yeah. One, you're like you have this mindset. You're starting to question everything, and then you have officers that are supposed to be protecting your rights, and they are definitely not. And you go, man, something is. And then another thing happens, and another thing happens, and you start going on the internet. Do you think the internet, having been there and giving you access to this kind of information, made a big difference? Like 10 years before,
if you didn't have
video on the internet, it wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Or 50 years before without the internet, I think internet has changed, this freedom movement. Yeah, changed humanity where we now have a chance of actually achieving this kind of stuff because we're talking to each other. We're sharing, you know, we're all richer. We're sharing. We communicate easily. It's just. I think it's going to change everything. But yeah, being able to go on the internet and just see that this had been happening to a lot of people and that I'm not alone. And then, you know, and then some of the people talking about it, like the cop block guys, you know, they're also talking about libertarianism and Ron Paul. And so I started, you know, hearing more of that stuff, eventually heard the word volunteerism and, you know,
so you kind of came in the 2012 campaign, not the 8.
I wasn't even, no, I didn't get into libertarianism until probably like really start being like, okay, I'm going to research this and start reading books on it until, late 2012. So then like 2013, I went to Libertopia in San Diego and that was like my first time going to like a Liberty event and like looking for other people.
Yeah, I probably at that one.
It was kind of like after Ron Paul, after the like, I wasn't paying attention to the elections when I was learning about libertarianism, I should say.
Okay, so what prompted you to, during this time, when did you start having, what is your wife's name?
Mari.
So Mari, you and Mari are a couple at this time? Or?
Oh, no, we've been married for 12 years. So we were married in 07.
Oh, so then you done this together.
Yeah, yep. We went through this together. So, I mean, I would say like, really, it was like, I started going through it and, you know, she's just a, you know, my wife, loyal and, you know, we're sticking it through together. So even though there's definitely tough times going through that, that shift in your thinking, you know, and realigning the worldview.
And you're young enough that you kind of, man, we got to make a decision here.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, you know, go through that process. I mean, what was your day job during this time in San Diego?
Sure. Actually, we were living about an hour north working for her family's roofing company, which was a fairly large roofing company. We had about 60 employees, about 30 something when I started. But and after maybe a year or so there, just at kind of in temporary positions, we got into decided we liked it, liked working construction, liked working, you know, it was all back end construction, working in the office, and eventually got into sales. And so when I left, her and I were doing a lot of the work at the company for the administration side, a lot of sales management, and the company was doing great, but we knew that we didn't like working for family, and we also knew that we kind of wanted to do something else with our life, that being just right where we grew up wasn't us. And so we wanted to do our own thing, something that we owned, you know, that wasn't owned by someone else, but build up, you know, our own life. And so we decided in 2015 that we were going to sell our house, sell everything we owned, hit the road. And so we did that. That was about a year preparing at the company, because when you're that in those kind of positions, it takes a while to like move out of them, train other people to do what you were doing, you know, when you're in an executive position. And so we sold the house in 2016, hit the road. That summer is when we met you. Summer was Jackalope. No, that was 2016, not when we met you, but like that was the when we went to your house, and that summer of 2016 when we went to Jackalope, went to your house.
So that was your first festival, kind of first time at Jackalope.
At Jackalope, yeah.
And Porkfest.
No, I went to Libertopia in San Diego in 13.
Okay.
Pork Fest in 2014. I'm not sure.
I may have been.
I met Davi then. I met some. Yeah.
Well, here, get the microphone. You're going to do it. Go.
So is she a willing participant in this journey of yours, or did you kind of drag her along, or did she, or was she like,
Bob Anderson,
she dragged
from
you
Arizona.
Along?
Sure, sure. I mean, I think there was a bit of dragging along in the beginning, but, you know, I think my wife saw the logic in it, but was, you know, having that cognitive dissonance of like, no, but this isn't what we were taught. This isn't the way the world works. And then at some of these conferences, Libertopia in San Diego was one of them. She started hearing things about, you know, nonviolent communication, peaceful parenting, things that resonated with her. And it's like, oh, okay, this is how you apply it in real life. Because I'm here just, you know, I'm just pissed at the cops at this point. I'm just like, yeah, we got to burn down the government. And then she's hearing things about how to apply this in a positive way, not a destructive way. And so then she really got on board and was like, you know what, this is the right for our family. And this is, you know, the real, like, only peaceful philosophy out there. And so, yeah, 2016, we hit the road, sold our house. We ended up traveling, went to Freedom Fest, went to Mises Circle up in Seattle, went to Jackalope, went to Pork Fest that year, all that summer. But we decided that before we moved to New Hampshire,
I thought you guys ended up moving
to Nicaragua before we moved here.
Okay, whoa. Man, don't be skipping that stuff.
I wasn't skipping. I was just getting to it.
All right, go.
We had always had this dream of living in Central America. We had visited Nicaragua before. And so we're like, you know, we're not tied down right now. It's the perfect time to try it. I'm quite into like alternative building methods and whatnot. And so I'd done a lot of research while we were road tripping into this thing called Super Adobe. I imagine maybe you're familiar, but it's clay and sand and concrete mixed together. And then preferably using a hydraulic press to make bricks. And Nicaragua has a terrible building industry where they use fired clay bricks, which are like glass. They're not strong at all. It's a seismically active area. So I thought I'd go down there, see what see if I like Nicaragua, and come down there with an idea that I'll build a business making building materials. And had a whole business plan, but ended up Nicaragua kind of sucks. The government's socialist.
Yeah, okay.
They're fairly anti-foreigner.
God forbid you be successful, they're eyeballing.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, so then they're anti-foreigner, but then if you want to stay there, you basically have to become a citizen, which means you have to invest $100,000 into a business there, which, okay, fine, that was, you know, in my game plan. But once you're a citizen, they want your kids. They want to own your kids. They want you to have to get permission to leave the country with your kids. So it's just like, even if you have dual citizenship, they're like, no, you need 2 weeks ahead of time written permission. When I heard that, I was like, no. I'm not doing that. I think they have mandatory education system that's not enforced. They have all this socialist stuff that's not enforced, but the kid thing they did enforce. And so I was just like, all right, I can't do that.
And we're gone.
Yeah, and I'm out. So, so we dropped that business idea. We spent about 4 months in Central America and went back to San Diego, bought an RV, loaded it up with a few things that we had saved. We left them in my parents' basement. And drove out here to New Hampshire. Been here 2.5 years, and we're loving it here. It was the right choice.
Okay. When I first saw you, you know, it's one thing you have, we're going to walk about, you know, some libertarian family and everything, and they, wow, there's no dents on their car. It was like semi-new. You know, they took baths, had all their teeth. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they're not hillbillies. It's kind of, you know, so I could see it was kind of this thing. You know, it was a search. You were on a search. So every time I see them, yeah, we need to talk. Well, now's the time. Yeah. And that's why I just, because this is so inspiring to a lot of people, and they have the same experiences. It's always something. Something happened that broke their, you know, nope, this isn't right. Whatever they've been telling me, they're just BSing me. You know, so once you go, they, them, those, they won't leave me alone, that kind of thing. So you made the decision to come here. Now, you know, like Bob and I were going, Arizona's pretty cool. I mean, I like Arizona, but, you know, and you can have a lot of different places and everything, but New Hampshire's kind of got it going on. But, God, I hate snow. I mean, my wife, this sucks. And spring is like so short in summer, but it's really nice up here. In Arizona, we can, in the desert, as long as you got like 3 months between 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., you get away from the sun anvil. I mean, you're usually doing okay. Or you can go up north and you got two places.
I mean, Arizona. If I wasn't here, I would be up in Flagstaff area. Like that area is just like the whole Colorado Mesa area is amazing. But being in Arizona was our like second favorite place of all the places we went to, particularly northern Arizona, not the Phoenix area.
You guys come down in August, it's up there at 78. It's nice. It's cloudy.
Perfect up there.
You go down beautiful. Go down to our place. What the hell is this?
110. It's terrible.
Yeah. We're going to live in the pool. So if I had two places, it would be down in the desert because it's like 9 months awesome. Then you go up northern, northeastern Arizona and you know, it's 3 hour drive and you're freaking skiing. I mean, you can go.
Well, but the thing is the season for the desert is the winter. It's like, you know, January, right. Exactly. like I'm from San Diego and you don't go to the desert except for in the winter. You start around Thanksgiving and you stop around, you know, March or so.
Right.
Those are the best times to be in the desert. It's cold as heck at night, but the days are just absolutely beautiful.
So then
I have never had to shovel the sunshine.
Even though it drops to freezing, you don't have to shovel anything in the desert.
Well, the thing is that we're going, you know, every time I visit, I've been to New Hampshire a lot, you know, over the years, since like 07, during the Ron Paul thing. We were really heavy working that. And then in 08, I mean, I've been, lots, you know, dozen times. And by coming here, even in the winter, record snowfall, I always enjoyed the people. I enjoyed the land. I enjoyed the customer service. We're in Massachusetts. Customer service sucks.
Right.
I mean, even in New Hampshire on the border there, it sucks. It is this New England, you are just have an invasion ready to come get you, you know?
Yeah.
So the Free State Project probably held a lot of that off. You know, in Arizona, it's a Californication of. They come to all the small towns. They want to do the same thing. Wow, we're free. It's great. You need more park sidewalks and streetlights.
Like California.
Here in New Hampshire, I can understand the draw. And if you had the resource, maybe, you know, two places. But if you had to pick, climate-wise, I might have gone, someplace else. What is the draw in New Hampshire? Why New Hampshire?
So I think climate does help us, though, because you can see everyone else does that, too. You know, everyone's in Phoenix and San Diego and L.A. and Florida. And, you know, so if the weather's like, I think the quote-unquote bad weather keeps the riffraff out.
There you go.
So I think it's like a filter, a natural filter. Like, and it ends up being the same for the Liberty Movement. You know, a lot of libertarians say like, oh, I'd move except for, the weather. But I mean, you're kind of the exception of there's in my travels, there's not a lot of super active libertarians all over the place. I think people like you are the exception. And I think the really dedicated people, a lot of them end up moving here. And so we're getting kind of like the best of the best, I think.
You know, it's big thing is I am looking for, we have a campaign that we're going to be doing in Arizona, and it's going to be no mandates or eliminating exemptions on vaccines. You know, I don't need the crown notions and potions forced into my kids' flesh kind of thing. The other one, and that's a property right. You know, I own myself. You know, so it's kind of a property thing. The other property thing is while, you know, in California, you can occupy the sidewalk and crap in the ditch, but you can't go live on your own land. So this having to have permission for an occupancy permit from the crown. So the meme is, if it pleases the crown, may I occupy my own land? I
mean, right.
You know, so I'm those two issues is what we're going to focus on in this next election cycle in Arizona. It'll also kind of overlap a lot of stuff that's going on here. Mike Silva, which is one of the legislators
right.
here, has a problem with his. And when we were at Pork Fest, it dawned on me, what is their power? It's the occupancy permit. You cannot occupy your own land without their permission. And I'm going, that sucks. That's got to right. change. So I'm looking at if there was a place. Now, there's some places we have friends that live in the, bowels of freaking woods or something in Missouri, and they have no building codes, no occupancy permit. You can do whatever the heck you want.
Sure.
And I'm going, ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Is there any of those places in New Hampshire? I buy land. I go take, because we manufacture domes, man. I can live some good life and coat it in earth bags and wrap and do in the adobe of kind of, man, I can kick some butt if they let me.
Right.
Is there a place here?
I don't know. I'm not that expert on that.
We're freaking going. I thought you were a builder guy, man. Let's go find out. So
I can tell you that. So in general, building here is as a contractor, I don't need licensing here. That's a benefit. So there's no construction licensing in California.
Really?
California has 43 construction licenses.
Yeah, no, don't even start.
Yeah.
If you want Arizona's is bad.
If you want a roof and then paint the siding, you need two different licenses for that. You can't do that. Sorry. Ugh. Here, there was no licensing.
Okay, wait a minute.
So that kind of stuff is
benefit. BBcontractor.com on the yellow page of whatever the heck. And and you don't have to have any license. They go to you, the buyer beware.
And I would say my experience so far is that the building departments are a bit more lax than California, but they still have the building departments, right? But some areas don't. I just haven't done work there. But I've heard that there's areas of New Hampshire that don't have the building departments, don't have the zoning. But other places have it. They have
Bob,
it just as bad as San Diego.
You need to find out where they is.
Yeah. because maybe Missouri has that right now, but I mean, that's why it's the Free State Project. You know, it wasn't picked because it has all the best of the best in all the legal ways, so it does have zoning and building and all that stuff that, we want to get rid of it, but we got to live with it right now.
They always go on about there's no income tax. And when we started looking at it, my wife and I, really? Okay, well, let's go
I think
take
that's
it.
Bullshit.
Right. I go, let's go look at it. I'm going, well, they're taxing this, and then you make money on this. And they go, well, that's not an income tax. It's a you made money tax or some crap. You know what I'm just going, what are they talking about?
So I think a lot of people in the Free State or in the libertarian movement these days understand that there's this movement to move libertarians to New Hampshire. And it started with Jason Sorens and the Free State Project. Then at some point, the Free State Project became Free State Project Incorporated, and it became a marketing arm for this idea. And so it's, because the idea itself can't be centralized, right? Like it's in its nature, it's a decentralized idea trying to get people that are interested in decentralization.
We're the 501c's, right?
Right. So, but that's really the marketing arm. So they've created these memes and things that say no income tax, which is a bit fallacious because there's all sorts of things like payroll tax and enterprise tax and all these taxes that directly affect income. It's just not a normal income tax.
I saw that.
Also say no sales tax, but there's no general sales tax. All the, if you go out to eat or if you stay at a hotel, that's all taxed at like 9% here. So, the meals tax here is higher than it is in San Diego or can be depending on where you are. But yeah, so that's good. But one of the things they don't have here is a town can't implement its own taxes. So, in California, they have a base tax of 7.25 or whatever it is. And in LA, it's 10% because LA can put in its own taxes.
Oh, no, I'm familiar.
Can't do that here. So at least there is a bit of a check here that like every town's the same, at least on that. Like there's only one tax on sales and it's on the
and they get a cut from
meals.
The state revenue.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
but they can't add their own. Yeah. So there is like little things where it's like, it does make sense why they kind of picked New Hampshire. It's better in this way and that way.
Well, that was not really my impression when it was the record snowfall of, oh my God, by 9 o'clock, it was done. Everybody had their own plow. They, it was kind of the small community took care of them. They didn't wait on the man. There wasn't like, well, somebody's going, they were somebody.
Yeah,
that
lots of
idea
people.
Is that they are the somebody.
Lots of people move here from places with way worse snow and they're like, it's not that bad here. It really isn't. I visited in winter before I moved here in 2015. I came during Liberty Forum. Yeah. And so that year they said it was really bad. Like, they're like, oh man, I think the accumulation was like 5 or 6 feet. So they had a lot of snow on the ground when I got there. And my son was, what was he, 4 at the time? And so, you know, the snow's over his head. And I was like, you know, but it's not that bad. And when the sun came out, it was a beautiful day. You know, the sun came out and there was, it was perfect. It was, you know, it was like you put a coat on, but it was a beautiful day, even though there's 6 feet of snow on the ground and all the streets were cleared. And, you know, so it seemed like, you know, if that's the, if that's a bad year, I'm like, all right, this isn't that bad. It's not that bad of winters.
And the other thing was, is that, in Arizona, the roads are pretty good. You know, I guess because they don't get beat up a lot, but they take care of, we got like roads, you know, that, that work. West of the Mississippi, okay, you get to California, kind of sucks. But, I mean, you know, the Rocky Mountain states, they take care of the roads. You go east of the Mississippi, it sucks.
Yeah.
But New Hampshire, the roads seem pretty nice.
The roads are all right here. There's wonky things they do here. Like, so first of all, they salt the roads in the winter, which is destructive to the roads, to the rivers, and all this stuff. But they also, the numbering on the highways, it's not like anywhere else I've lived. The exits are just numbered sequentially, but not by mile marker. So exit 4 can be at, you know, mile 5, and exit 5 could be at mile 20. And like, it just, like everywhere else, they tell you the mile marker. And so, yeah, so there's all sorts of things they do with the roads, like the on-ramps to the freeways. There's no dedicated on-ramp lane. In California, like if you're getting on a freeway, you go right into your own lane so you can get up to speed. Here, they're just like, jump on the freeway, you know? We hope you can get up to speed in time.
Yeah, I know, like Texas.
Stuff like that where too. I'm like, the design of the roads isn't that good, but, you know, the paving and the of them is nice. Like, you know, there's not potholes everywhere. And I live in the city, and it's like, you know, it's not that bad compared to, like, you know, downtown San Diego.
Are you involved in the politics here?
I try not to be. I try not to be involved. Free state, I'm involved because, I got a lot of friends that are in politics. And
how many free staters or legislators or kind of liberty? I know they do this cross-pollination of party, whatever the heck. I don't care about that. But,
yeah,
you know, how many libertarian, really, you know, good freedom-oriented people out of, God, what's the legislature? Like 500, 450 or some crap like that, right?
It's 400 in the House and what is it, 28 or 32 or something like that in the Senate.
Okay, so it's 24. Like, you know, 400 yeah. Yeah. And dozens. So you, each person only represents probably a few thousand people.
Yep, it's,
you
know, like 3,500 or
so. So how many at one time, the peak or whatever you've been here, have been in the legislature?
At least a dozen. I mean, I would say there's probably around a dozen something right now.
Do they have that? They got enough influence? You think the legislature are keeping them straight? They're just keeping them in check, you know?
No, it's a big legislature. I mean, I think it's good that we have people up there. And I'm so in the libertarian movement, this I'm very much for the multi-pronged approach. You know, I'm not political, but I'm very thankful that other people are. And that
no
they're fighting
plan
that fight.
For freedom. You got to exactly, go do whatever. Exactly, don't make me. See, that was the one thing that really. I was, I didn't, you know, publicly go super stupid about it, but I wasn't keen on the pledge, you know, that you will come here and you will work, and sure. You will do what we tell you, and you signed a pledge, got to freaking be in the army of we're going to kick ass. And I'm going, there was three types when it first started. I could tell the people that were moving here, there's basically three types. One was the more rural, going up to, was it Berlin or something, you know, the
right,
northern part of it.
Right, people that get out of the cities.
They were like, yeah, hell, yeah. Just you're lucky I even came. Right. I'm glad you guys are there. I think by osmosis, we're going to make it more free.
Right.
We're just going to raise our kid. Leave me alone. I don't want to be on your damn list.
Sure.
Okay. Then you had the, nope, you're on the list, and we're kind of in the armed forces of our 20,000. We're going to go whip ass. And then the others were like the anarchist of, man, you want me up here? I'm going to be vocal about bite me, and I'm right. You know, that kind of thing. So these three different things, you know, the people that just wanted to be left alone didn't care. The other ones, the anarchist activist and the political activist, they were more at odds with each other than they were against the state, you
right.
Know? So I'm just, has that evolved out? Have you kind of found a symbiosis? Everybody kind of chill?
I mean, I think, at least in the time I've been here, you know, I've been watching the Free State Project since like 2013 when I heard about it. I mean, I got into libertarianism and it was one of the first things I heard about was the Free State Project. It's a pretty big deal, I would say, in the liberty movement. And I would say I think that there seemed to be more turmoil in the past and more like butting heads in the past, especially between the politico types and the anarchist types. Right now, I think there's a lot of people working together on the same team. And it's like, for me, like, I'm not political, but I'm helping my, my political friends, and my activism is in other places, and they're helping me.
You know, the one thing that I'm most interested in is the, not talking about it, just doing it. Mm-hmm. That's why I love Jay Noon.
Yeah, no, I'm that kind of guy too. Jay and I get along.
Like, yeah, he's just like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
I'm doing it. You guys let me know how it works out, and you pay me in Bitcoin. So, yeah, crypto, is that a big thing here?
I mean, totally. I mean, I do, yeah. Yeah, I spend cryptocurrency on at least weekly basis here in the Free State, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I buy about as much as I can. I mean, today upstairs we're going to have a market, and you know, I'm only going to spend cryptocurrency at that.
Well, tell me about that. It starts in like a half hour or so.
Yep.
And they'll do what? What's going on? Is that every month or something? Or?
Yeah, it's once a month here in Manchester, and mainly here at the Quill. We've also done it at my house and other places, but it is a community market day where porcupines from all over the state come with their wares, come with you know, maybe a craft that they do. Some do it professionally, you know, so they probably sell at other places as well. And some do it just for fun. Sometimes it's kids. So you're talking about Nick. Nick's kids are going to be selling some sourdough that they baked. You know, I'm going to be selling some stuff as well. And so it's just a way for us to get together, share what we do or what we're passionate about. And for me, especially at first, when I first moved here, it was very therapeutic to come and mingle for a few hours with other libertarians, trade with them, and have that sense of, you know what, I don't think anyone here is going to give a dime to the man, and know that they're, you know, have a really good, I'm 99.9999% sure that no one's going to do that, and then be able to do it with cryptocurrency or silver and just, you know, not even use their war coins. It was very therapeutic, and, you know, I think I've gotten all the therapeutic benefit out of it, and now it's just really fun. But at first, man, I recommend everyone do it.
Mental health.
Yeah, just for your own mental health. Just start trading with libertarians, because,
you know, you mentioned Nick. Nice. Who you're talking about is Nick Sarwar from Phoenix. He just moved here a couple months ago. And, you know, we know Nick well. We hang out and comes to parties that we have and in the studio. He's national chair of the Libertarian Party. And, you know, he's definitely political. I mean, you don't be national chair of the Libertarian Party and want to, you know, play without being political. And then you have the 2020 cycle coming in. It's going to be interesting to see what Nick does. I know he's an organizing political to do something political, but he's fun to hang out with. I like his family. You know, they're pleasant people, but they're freaking political.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here, because I know a lot of the guys he's going, they're like, damn, you must listen to Ernie's show, kind of thing. But I'd like to, maybe we'll get to see him and record a little bit. We'll certainly have him come on the show and talk about his experiences after a while or during the campaign, and we'll see how it's going. But there is
definitely, or talk to him about that moment at Porkfest. I saw it in his eye, the moment when he thinks, oh, all right, I'm actually going to move, you know, because the whole reason for getting people to Porkfest is to get them to move. I mean, it's a fun festival, and there's people like you that come every year, and you have no intention of moving here.
I don't know, man. You find me a place. I get a summer home here. Right. You know, you find me a place I can build. Right, and so I don't need the man.
I shouldn't give up on you. All right, I shouldn't give up on you. I'll keep working you. But you
that's
know,
all I need.
I can build
on a piece of land
freely
without
a
permission slip. Crap, man, that's all you had to say.
Right Yeah, no, I'm there with you on that too. That's a big thing of mine.
Big.
So keep working on you, but everyone that's at Porkfest, I you know, I ask them the same question. So when are you gonna move? And I asked Nick that question. I'd only met him once before, when Brandon Finney had switched from Republican to Libertarian in the State House here a couple years ago, right after I moved. And then at Porkfest this year, I was talking to him about it, and you know, he had that look in his eye like he's gonna do it. And you know, I remember when other people said I had that look in my eye. They're like, oh, shit, you're going to move here, aren't you? Like, it's you could see something when someone's like, it means something to them.
He's lived around the country.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was in Washington. He was in Colorado, in Arizona. And, you know, he had family business there and so on, and whatever's going on with that kind of freed him up in family. Just like, you know, I think we're looking for a change. The kids are young. Where are you going to go and be free, kind of deal?
Right.
Plus, you know, you know, libertarian movement and party is, you know, semi-small pond, and he's a big fish. You know, so he's like, yeah, we can bring it to, what can we do?
Yeah.
So this is, I think, a good fit for Nick. and we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be odd. I'm going to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, Nick and I are friends.
I mean, I hope, like, more than anything, I hope it's good for the Free State Project. I hope it's good for New Hampshire and it brings more liberty types here.
I don't want to put a liberty label on too much politics, like the Free State, you know.
Sure.
The pledge is I will do everything I can to build the collective against collectivism. I mean, you know, I'm like, yeah, like that'll work. But the but I've seen the evolution in like places like here, the Quail.
Right, which has been here for 10 years now.
Yeah.
Right,
under different iterations, different kind of, you know, flavors, yeah, but the and people, and it's evolving.
Same location, same like general maturing idea of a community space to get together, you know, a space that's
it's
our
always
own.
A good party. You know, every time I come in.
Right. Right. So to everyone out there, come to Liberty Forum, and come to Liberty Forum after party.
Well, one reason it works, and you got, you know, the fire department across the street, is that you have a it's not like the man doesn't know you're here, you know.
Right.
It's kind of a private club. You have your RFID little cards. You get in, or you got we're out there open. It's Ernie, man. Let me in. You know.
Right.
But they
members get access here, and yeah, it's Right. It's not a secret that it's here.
But it is private.
But it is very private, yeah. And so, you know, anyone that comes, we ask them, you know, don't take a bunch of photos, don't talk about everything, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, we try to keep it kind of that, I don't want to say speakeasy because that's not the right term because we're not a speakeasy.
It's but
like,
voluntarist.
Just very private and voluntarist and understand that, like, you know, that some people don't like us, you know, like, and so what we do here is private.
Well, the big thing that I think it has,
but mostly
big,
what we do here is like the market day. There'd be political activism here. We watch movies upstairs. We get together for potlucks and welcoming new people to the state and things like that.
An example of how voluntarists interact. You have everything's like donation. If you get some product here, you get a drink or you get
right.
Whatever,
this whole thing runs donated on donations.
It's all trust, yeah. Kind of, and that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize. When we have our Freedom Summit or it's Jackalope or whatever. Well, it's not you're going to cover up or hide or store your gun. Nah, you know. Oh, you leave your laptop laying around. Yeah, but you know, I mean, you might want to be prudent. I mean, there's not
right.
Everybody's a saint, but you know, it's. I think people are surprised at how much the community kind of polices itself.
Right, and how much I think some people are surprised at how much community libertarians build, because there's this impression that we're all isolationist and want to be off on our own, be hermits and whatnot. And that's of course not true. And
no,
anyone
want,
that comes here,
the freedom
can see
of
that.
Association,
right? Exactly. And when you were talking about collectives earlier, at a quick story, I was at a conference in Berlin, Germany, and I was talking to these anarcho-communist types.
Yeah.
And I was trying to tell them about the Free State Project and what we're doing in New Hampshire. And they kept being like, okay, so tell me again, like, what does your commune actually look like, though? Like, what do you guys? And they're like, there's no commune. It's decentralized. You know, it's centralized in New Hampshire, but it's decentralized after that. And the concept of decentralization kind of like flew over their heads. Like, they couldn't really figure it out, but these were techie types. And so I related it to decentralized technology. And they're like, oh, okay, I get it a little more, you know, but, yeah, there's like this idea of that there's a commune here. It's not. It's get here and do your own thing.
I was covering for a radio station when Camp Casey was going on in Texas, and Cindy Sheehan's camped out in front of W. Bush's place, and there were a bunch of the progressive communists. It was the beginning of, you know, there was, Move On, and you had like Raw Story and Common Dreams and Daily Cod. This was the beginning of the Huffington Post, all this kind of the progressivism and the 06 kind of stuff. And we're covering, I could see what was going on. And I'm going, oh, I see what's going on. And we got in a conversation, and even though I work for Air America, which was a, you know, liberal, we were their token libertarians, right? So I'm out there from Arizona, and they go, oh, you libertarians don't get it. You know, we got to have the, you know, the hippie commune of the whatever. And one of the main guys that did the house there, the House of Peace, he goes, well, I've lived in communes with libertarians. And they look at me, and right. I go, yeah, it's called families. It's voluntary. You can do as long as I can leave if I want. You can be into taking my stuff, whatever. I mean, it's got to be voluntary. And one of the young guys looked right at me, and he goes, yeah, but then it wouldn't work.
Right.
And I'm going,
that's what we say.
Whoa.
Hey, that's my line.
Yeah, it's time for me to leave. I go, peace out, you know, right. And I just left. And I go, that realization, when you talk to these people, if you aren't able to force people to do what you want, it won't work.
Right.
And that's why I'm so enamored with what happens here in New Hampshire, because I knew it was going to go through these stages. Mm-hmm. Whenever you, you know, we call it Steiger's Law in Arizona. It's a long story, but what it is, it goes like this. Whenever you create an organization around a movement or a cause, sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. Every single time.
Yeah, it's like bureaucracies running for their own sake. You know,
it becomes
a machine that just keeps
that
going.
That has to be perpetuated. Yeah. Why? I don't know. We forgot why. We're just doing it, you know. So this here, when you have the voluntarist, and every year you have an election, you do the ranked choice voting in the board, you have this philosophy that's here. It's voluntary donation here. Hang member card comes with membership, has privileges, but responsibilities don't be. And it's pretty much, don't be a dick clause.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much.
It's just, don't be
not a
dick.
Lot of rules here.
Yeah, you know, don't make people uncomfortable. You know, don't be, you know, hitting on the women unless they want you to, or if they say no, get the hell out of their face. I mean, you know, it's just that kind of thing. What about the social justice warrior in pronoun politic and whatever? Because that's always been kind of a thing too. Because they'll, you know, whatever, the gay community, alternative sexual. I don't know how many initials I got to remember, but you know, the thing is that. That's never been an issue. Nobody cares, but then they want to make it an issue. They want you know, libertarians to kind of, you know, champion something. You know, how does that work here in the Quill?
Interesting. I don't know about, like, if there's anything special about the Quill, because the Quill doesn't really have rules. Like, there's not a lot of rules. It's basically like non-aggression, be respectful, don't be a dick. Like, those are the rules. And then the big one, don't die here. If you're gonna die, do it outside.
Yeah, wheel carted out. You know. I don't know. He's on the sidewalk, man.
Right. Like, did he die there? No, it can't be. We have a rule against that. Surely didn't happen.
We have a law.
And you know that's how laws work. So, but as far as like maybe like the more general like libertarian community in New Hampshire, I think that there's a lot of tolerance because. Everyone here is on a journey and like we understand that. And when I see someone that's more like social justice warrior, whether it's the them, they, this kind of, you know, pronoun, social justice, whatever their cause is. And then they're like, you know, but I'm libertarian. Like I see that they're on a part in their journey and our journeys are different. You know, I'm not like further along or something like that. But as far as that journey, I think a lot of people try to be tolerant and respectful of the fact that that people are on a journey. Now that does mean that we do get some, you know, some socialist types that get in, you know, get in even these doors or get into the community and they end up finding their way out. You know, like if they don't come along eventually, like, you know, if their journey's not progressing, they end up leaving. And that's perfectly fine where it's a filter. You know, but I think there has to be some tolerance is what I'm saying.
You know, what's been interesting. I go to a lot of these conferences. I see people with a lot of tattoos. You know, you got any tattoos? You got a story?
No, I don't have any tattoos.
You know, this is interesting. I see this one beautiful young girl, blonde, probably in mid-20s. And she had some, like, you know, communist, socialist tattoos. And then it kind of gets up into more anarchist, libertarian, Lovolution logo kind of, you know. Kind
her
of
journey's like, on her body.
Exactly. So I go to the other people and I say, all right, we're doing the tattoo. Because nobody ever, I mean... I'm supposed to look at them, right? I mean, that's why you did it, you know? So I go, all right, tell me the story. What was your first one? This one. What was the next one?
Yeah.
The next one. The next one. And you got this permanent painting of their journey that's written on their body and their arms and everything. And I'm going, all right. And you can see this awakening. It's like a stack, a level of awareness, and they want to document it. And I'm wondering, okay, well, how did you get there? Why? What was your journey? What was your focus? What were you sold as a bill of goods? What sparked you? Why would? And a lot of times it comes from childhood. They didn't have a good base or a foundation to build on. Where did yours come from? I mean, was it parents? Was it circumstances? Was it DNA? I mean, what?
I'm not sure, honestly. I think partly the way I was raised, but then, like, you know, my siblings were raised by the same people and in the same kind of culture, and they didn't follow the same path as me. So,
are you the oldest, youngest?
I'm in the middle. So I've got one younger brother and two older sisters and an older brother. So towards the bottom of the middle. I'm not right in the middle.
Well, what's the age span from the youngest to the oldest?
We're about 2 years apart each. So, you know, growing up, it was like, you know, you asked earlier, like, you know, I want to hear your earliest memories. I'm like, my earliest memories are just playing with my brothers and sisters.
Yeah, you were the young one, got rolled up in the carpet. You know?
Exactly.
So. So this is, yeah, this has been, is there anything else? I mean, I got five, but we could be here for hours. But what was, you know, is this the culmination? You think you're here? This is it?
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, I think I was at a point in my life where I, you know, what I was like 33 or so when we decided that we were going to move away.
Now?
36. Okay. So, you know, 3 or so years ago when we left.
You know, I was called a kid until I was 40,
yeah.
You know.
Right. yeah, before we were, when we decided, I guess 4 years ago now, when we decided that we were going to leave our home and you know, find something else, we knew that this philosophy was going to become more and more important. And then when we decided to move to New Hampshire, it was very much me looking at my life and thinking, yeah, you only get X amount of years here. If I'm not going to dedicate it to something awesome, what am I doing? And for me, you know, dedicating just to like entrepreneurship or something like that, and just building a business isn't enough. I need more intention than that. I need it to be related to my morals, related to my philosophy, and being in New Hampshire seemed like the best way to do it. But yeah, it's definitely like a commitment. I don't plan on leaving.
Well, what is your day job now?
Construction. Yeah, so building a construction company with some other free staters, and yeah, things are going well.
Okay, so you didn't have to have a light. You could have, I know how to do it. Let's go do it.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And it was easier.
What is your home? I mean, do you have a property? You're downtown in a, you know,
yeah. So when we first
apartment, I mean, what?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting story because a lot of people, you know, maybe some people are listening and thinking about moving. The way we did it was we knew we needed a trailer to move stuff across country, so we bought an RV trailer, put our few boxes in there, stayed in the RV on the way out, and then put those few boxes in a little bit of storage. We lived in an RV for 5 months over the summer. New England summer is beautiful, so it was a great thing to do. And we traveled around. We lived in 4 different towns during that time. And then in October, when it gets cold and the campgrounds close, we moved into an apartment just a few blocks from here. And then about 5 months ago, we bought a house about 10 minutes south of here. And so it's a nice house. We're happy there. So well, we're in the city. We're in Manchester, though.
Okay. So yeah. How much land do you have?
So
well, see, I'm wondering. Libertarians get land,
right? Right.
Construction guys, all of a sudden it turns into a junkyard and a
when I moved here, I thought I wanted 200 acres, and then you know we were really open to what we were going to do. So I wasn't committed to doing construction, and we were really open into you know where we were going to take our lives and just kind of wanted to let the opportunities guide us, kind of thing. And but you know, after some time, we decided that construction is something we do like doing, and we know we can make money at. So we got back into that. So I kind of dropped this idea of ever having or anytime soon having like 200 acres out in the woods. I'm like, okay, that'll be like 10 years from now or 5 years from now or something like that. But right now, we're focusing on just building the company, and so we thought being closest to Manchester would be the best.
So how big's your lot?
I think it's like 0.4 acres or so.
Okay, so it's big enough you could put RV on and
oh yeah, I got my RV on there. Yeah. Yeah. I've got like parking for like 8 cars and
yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. Especially
compared to like the place where I lived in California. So you know, my house is a little bit bigger than my place in California, but then my lot is like 8 times larger and the place costs
as much.
Oh, less than half. It costs less than half as much. You know, and I'm like more in the city. So if I was this, you know, in the city in California, it would cost even more the place I had. And so, yeah, it's just like the coming from California, the real estate is just, I'm like, oh, it's so cheap here. You know, it's so nice.
You know, that was another thing. A lot of the people that came early on, certainly in Keene, you know, and, you know, Ian, especially, man, he's like, you don't get your stripes unless you get arrested, okay? You got to come and, you know, do something, you know? And so you had a lot of these young couch surfing libertarians of I kind of, you know, what. And has that evolved that, you know, kind of you weed through a lot of the, you know, dreadlocky, I'm kind of looking for somewhere and feed me.
Right.
I'll go stand on a sidewalk thing, you know, and it seems that it's matured more. The families are starting to come
in. Yeah,
and
totally.
And the employees that you're able to get, one, the townies here, are they quality employees or some of the quality of the free staters? Are they able to populate your employee ranks?
Yeah. I mean, so far, yeah. For us, and I know a lot of other businesses operate the same way. My buddy Matt's business, him and his wife's business is just a few doors down from here. And everyone that works there is libertarian. You know, all the part of town we're in, I mean, I can point to quite a few apartment buildings that are just full of libertarians. But yeah, quite a few people have done well with businesses.
So they rent to the community, they get to the community.
They find work within the community. And, you know, it's not everyone, and certainly there's not enough for everyone.
So it's like Russians going to New York.
But as we build it, you go find the other Russians, right? So as we build it up, you know, and more people are building businesses and employing people, it'll be, I don't want to say more insular, but it'll be... the intention will be built into what we're doing. Like, we're going to be trading with each other more, and we're going to be, So see, I think we're in the process of that. Yeah.
See, I remember the reason I say that was in the early 80s. For a few months I lived in Queens. You know, I was helping a friend move there. Long story, but the landlord was a woman that, you know, got a visa to go to, you know, Italy, and boom, America. They escaped. We were dissidents of whatever. And we were at a Christmas party, and it was all of these Russians that had, one way or another, made their way to America. Well, two things happen. One, they, in the community, they hang in drywall or doing something. They're, you know, in the community, they found a job, they get them, you know, going. So they're integrating into the society, and they're learning to make money, and they go on, their kids get educated, and it's all good. Some of them were going, freedom, man, you got the freedom to starve. At least they fed me, and I got, you know, like some heat every now and then, and I got to stand in line and got some bread, and I got, this is like, you know, making me work,
right,
you know,
right.
So it's a lot of the freedom oriented people that think they want to come to New Hampshire, they think they're going to be free to smoke weed. This is what happens early on. You go to the Pork Fest, and this was it, dude.
Yeah,
cell phones don't work and everything. You're kind of isolated, which was kind of unique for them. They were freaking out that they couldn't get a signal. And they go, dude, man, it's out there. And you walk around and like people see and you can smoke weed. Right. Dude, let's go to New Hampshire and smoke. Dude.
Yeah.
And then they come here and they go, well, they run out of weed and they don't have any money to buy anymore. And then what? You know?
Right.
So this, I want you to be, not admonish, but warn the people that think they can just come here.
Right. Come here with a plan. Come here with money. Come here with savings. Come here and get yourself together first. Don't come here and start trying to do activism right away when you don't even have a place to stay or a job, you know? So plenty of people come and leave because they don't have money. They didn't come here with a plan, and they didn't come here with an ability to stay.
Be an add, not a subtraction.
Right. And then you have to work. Like, yeah, contribute, as Bob was just saying. Contribute to the economy here. Create value. I mean, that's there's so many things that once you understand libertarian philosophy, there's all these like takeaways. Okay, well, if I can't force people, the only, you know, the best and most efficient way to, even more efficient than forcing people, is to just create value for each other. And, you know, then people want to reward you with money and there's no force involved and you can convince them that they should buy from you and whatnot. But if you don't come here with that idea, if you don't come here with the money, you're going to fail and you're going to end up, you know, calling home to your parents or whatever.
Right.
And don't think that people here are going to support you or that we're looking for charity cases. I don't think that's the case. And you talked earlier about, you know, how maybe the guy with dreadlocks that just wants to smoke weed and do activism. Some of them come and some of them, you know, stay here for a bit. But like as far as like, say, the Quill goes or, you know, some of the other community centers in the area, it's something where like we don't want that basically. So like the Quill's. You know, it's not five bucks to
be
a member.
Dreadlock all you want. Just get to work.
right. Just get to work. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Dreadlock, smoke weed, whatever you want. But add to the environment and not just activism. Like, you know, actually get to work so that you can stay here. We're looking for long-term commitment. And so one of the things was like we were talking about the price of the club. You know, membership's $50. You know, the reason why it's not $5 is because we don't want all the riffraff to come through, right? Like you want it to be enough where it's
pays for itself.
Well, it pays for itself, but plus you have to have enough money. Like you if you're not working, you can't afford $50 a month is I guess what I'm getting at,
right?
Like, so if we charge $50 a month, it kind of guarantees that the people that are members here have to at least have a job, you know.
There's a lot of things, and job is not necessarily, you know, like I don't know,
have to make money, have to create value.
Well, I mean, it's not like legit job that paying taxes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mean you have to be a wage slave. Yeah, totally, totally. Of course.
Especially and with crypto, you know, a lot of
the
guys
in this community. So many people are looking to hire people part time, or you know, have a gig for this, or want to trade, and
or some guy just has skills. I mean, some people they just work for Bitcoin. You get it's 50% off if I get crypto and you pay me in Bitcoin Cash. I mean,
right.
You know, I get you. You know, we'll do a deal. You know, people like that. I mean, I don't want to say anything, but their initials are like, you know, J Noon. So you have, you know. Jay out here, you know, I call him Diesel and Dirt, because if it's something to do with heavy machinery, a diesel engine, or moving dirt, He's right. your guy.
Okay. You First know? Initial J, last name Noon. Right. We don't want to give him away or anything.
Yeah, no, hell, it's marketing for him. You don't care. But the so this is, Bob and I were up there with Derek Slopey from Maine, you know, a good friend. And we were there all weekend helping him, you know, do his dome thing. You know, heck, I was being the sweep up monkey, man. I was organizing. You guys do all I can try to just clean it up so we don't die.
This was last year or this year?
Last weekend.
Oh, last weekend. You guys are doing a dome thing out there.
Yeah.
Is it the same dome? The one from?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
No. His two double dome big, his house up there. Jay Noon's house.
Oh, Jay's house. I'm thinking Derek's house. Okay.
No.
Yeah,
no,
I got
Jay.
You. All right.
Well, no, Derek has got, a big warehouse. It's
kind of, I know. I've been there.
Yeah. No, I spent like 2 weeks doing the same thing. I was just cleaning, man, you know, getting it all done. And he's got a bunch of stuff. We're going up there today. To go see
you've been, and so it's a former paper like janitorial
paper
thing.
Mill or slaughterhouse, so. Or I mean, it's been there for like 100 years. God knows how many.
He's
things
got some must try brand napkins there too. Have you tried the brand of napkins? Must try?
No, I see the boxes of them though. I mean, they put them on. It was. Imagine a warehouse
full of melting paper products.
Right. It was a thing. But and
we were joking that all the paper products are must try brand because they all smell musty because of all the water damage in the warehouse.
Got it. Well, they saved, to use for God knows what. I mean, it was everything to do. I had to wait till Derek wasn't there so I could throw stuff away. I'm going, I don't know what happened to it, But it's really nice.
Yeah, it's a cool product.
It is. He was thinking he's going to move to Arizona, and he was looking at property. He's going to, and he bought that place. I go, you ain't going anywhere.
Right.
So he's stuck here. So I am looking for, no, seriously, that has been my criteria. I got family and grandkids and everything. I'm definitely going to have Arizona as a base of
right.
at least a winter. I mean, hell, if I can be there in the winter, why not? So it's a, but if I get land and do the stuff and the building that we do and a lot of the techniques that we have and, out at Bob's got 9 acres out in the middle of the nothing. He's been 15 years on the soil. He has no lines. It's mm-hmm. sewer, water, solar, wind, satellite, cell, septic, everything.
Yeah, everything's wired.
And it's been totally, the only reason they even know he's here is because they got satellites from the man.
Right.
They said, I think I see you doing something there, Right. And he goes to the post office. So he's been a great example for a decade and a half. So it's not like I think I know what can be done. I know.
Right.
So we're ready. And but I have these domes that we've given out, dozen of them to people. And just like, Kokush comes in, he makes like five different multi-size, whatever the hell he goes. So now we're looking, how do you cover them? How do you seal them? How do you? Well, once we figure that out, I'm ready to do it.
Sure.
I bring my stamp press up here, man. Won't you join my neighborhood?
Right.
I could bring it up and have it all ready, put it on a trailer, come up here and construct it in freaking 3 days. So I'm like, let's go. Give me the place to do it.
Right. No, I'm the same kind of guy. And I loved your, when we were at Jackalope and I first saw your domes, that actually was what set me off for the whole business plan in Nicaragua. So the whole idea of doing super Adobe bricks and manufacturing down there came out of me looking for other ways to manufacture domes.
Right.
And so there's these brick press machines that are all industrial that companies in Brazil and India and China sell. And I was looking to get one and I got their specs for how to build molds for them. So I came up with a set of molds that would let you press out bricks from dirt and build a dome out of it. I got prices on a machinist to make the molds and all this stuff. But it's not something that can really be done well in New Hampshire. It actually could probably be done pretty well in Arizona, but
no, it'd be great in Arizona. But let me tell you what
brick domes are, like you're working with geodesic frame domes, right? Like with the same style I saw before with the metal poles, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you what the plan would be. Our stamp press, we have the, the die, mm-hmm. Can do half inch, three quarter, or inch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do it, we do three quarter on Bob's, we did a 28-foot dome with four phase, three quarter inch, and you park SUVs on top. I mean, it's fine.
Right.
So I'm going, I don't think anybody bitch if I went inch, and I think I could do it pretty big, and how would I cover it? Then we're thinking, you ever see these earth bags,
sure.
that they do?
Yep.
So I'm going, you do earth bags, add maybe a little Portland or something or whatever, and you just fill it and you just loop around the dome and you're done. Then I'm going, and you can kind of put over windows, you can do it.
Yeah.
I want to try. And so, they go, oh, I'm sorry, did you get a permission slip of
right,
the engineering?
I know,
of this, I'm going, you know, shut up.
Right, totally, yeah.
I'm going to do it. You got a bulldozer, maybe you can, you know, I don't know if you can plow it. It might just crawl up on top of it. I mean, you know, so you find that?
All that regulation is like, they're missing on the fact that like people that have these ideas are really turned off by bureaucracy. Like I think a lot of creative types that especially like this kind of stuff we're talking about, constructing in ways that haven't been tried before.
And they know how cheap it is and they won't want you to
right,
do it.
Or that. You know, this regulation, even if there were, like, you know, because some bureaucratic types were like, well, there's a way to do it, but you ought to file Form 14B and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't do that kind of shit.
Yeah,
I don't file
I
forms.
Read.
Right, exactly. I can't deal with your bullshit. So I'm looking for the same thing, man. If you find it, let me know. And I'm going to get this, you know, I'll come out and help you build. And I got a lot of great ideas.
I'm telling you, we will set it up. We have
so,
it.
Wait, for your domes, have you thought about shotcrete?
Yes.
Okay, because that was my idea was just, you know, you put a backing on it, you put some chicken wire around the whole
right.
thing, shotcrete the heck out of it,
well,
and then do a spray on like acrylic or silicone roofing material on the other side.
Now, let me tell you what you know, we came up with. There was a stuff called spider mesh. Uh-huh. It's like when you do fencing and you have this perforated metal that you do stucco on. You're like in San Diego and everything.
I know,
they have that. Well, now they have it. It's a poly thing with strong bands in it that you can just wrap it around the dome. You shotcrete, you're done.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, then we're going, okay, do we want to do aircrete, make it a little bit more insulative and lighter? Do you want to do papercrete, which works really good? We tested that in Arizona.
Right.
There's so many things. And you could just take a stucco gun, you pour it in the top and go
totally.
I mean, you know, because what Adam did when he did it up in Ash Fork, he was making mortar, you know, trowel at a time, doing a 13 foot dome that was like freaking just giving people something to do. But
for sure,
yeah, I'm so all over it,
right.
But I am just, give me a place to, I'll show you. Okay, so we'll do, you know, one of the guys that was out there.
I think the biggest problem, when you say like, give me a place, I think the biggest problem is not necessarily finding the place, because we've heard like, you know, you can go to Missouri or you can go to, you know, maybe the backwoods of New Hampshire.
Some place I want
to be. But exactly, that's what it is. Like, even if I'm in New Hampshire, I don't want to be 2 hours north of here. Like, that's not where I want to live. Like, and fine, building like that might work as a, you know, as a hobby place or a place to go visit. But I would like it to be a place that I can actually commute from and live in, you know, like if I had land and I was building
closer
this kind of stuff.
You can get to, you know, somewhere around.
To civilization. To the towns. Over. Exactly. So that, I think that's the problem here in New Hampshire, is that the towns that have that kind of freedom aren't right next to the capital,
you know,
or to the big cities.
Like Berlin, it was a big solar paper, whatever. I was Bob showed
me one of the domes.
Yeah, the dome. That's a big ass dome, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, I built some with you at Jackalope. I built them at Porkfest, but all the ones that came out of your machine, yeah.
Yeah, no, I could build. You get three guys, and you have you get the materials there. I could punch out, 6,000 square feet of living space in a day.
Right.
I mean, and then you take another
and you can build
it
as they're coming
up.
Out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so it's just, there's so many things, and that, sincerely, that's what I think they're afraid of. Oh my God, people aren't going to have debt. They're going to be able to live autonomously. They don't have to pay interest to the bank. They don't have a mortgage. They got the land. They're free. And then what are they going to do? Oh my God, they're not under the
right.
thumb.
I mean,
know?
You can see the way they treat what they call homeless people. You know, like some homeless people are, I would say, legit homeless, and a lot of them just want to live outside. And that's totally unacceptable to the establishment. They're just like, you can't do that. Like, you know,
God forbid,
you
got to
go pay rent
house.
in an apartment or something like that.
Oh,
like,
no, they got a bulldozer for that.
Yeah. Right. Oh, totally.
Yeah, you can occupy the sidewalk. You just can't occupy your own land. I find that to be.
Well, that's the thing. If you have land, you're someone to go after, right? That's a signal to the state that you know you're a good target.
Yeah, we got a GPS census, so we know where your front door is.
Well, if you're living on the sidewalk, they don't care if you're pooping on it, puking on it. They don't care about it at all. You don't have any money. You're not that important to them. They're really, because you remember, it's all a racket, right? So they're trying to extort money out of you. If they think you don't have any money.
They got a government program for you, and they make
right,
some money
right,
on
right.
that.
Exactly. They want to do something else with you, but they don't. They're not going to come after you to extort you.
You know, I just got a call yesterday or day before from Morpheus, you know, the guy that got arrested doing Bitcoin in Phoenix.
Okay.
Thomas Costanzo. He just got out. He's at the halfway house.
Okay.
First thing he calls me and he says, "I'm at the halfway house." And he goes, first thing he says, he goes, "You want to make some money? This is the gig. They get a two-bedroom apartment. They put eight guys in there. They clear out the kitchen, the two rooms, bunk beds, and they charge and make, woohoo! And somebody's making some money on this one.
Yeah, totally. That's happening. I've seen that around town here, too. Yeah, halfway houses pop up, and it's obviously a racket. You know, there's rackets going on everywhere.
It's everything. So I'm, I tell you, I'm going to be preaching this, and we'll make some, you know, while Bob and I are driving, we'll do some searching or whatever, but they're not advertising. Come to our place. We have no building codes. I mean, you know, so I need to know. And if it's someplace that can, you got that? I will build my freaking neighborhood, put it on a trailer. I'll be driving to New Hampshire this next summer before Pork Fest, and we'll just do it right after Pork Fest. Said, hey, man, you want to go for the building party? This weekend, we'll build in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that's one of the beauties of, like you asked earlier, if this is, you know, something about my commitment to this, and you know, this is like my life choice, is to commit to New Hampshire, to libertarianism, but that also means to myself, to my family, to my company. So what I like of that is, once I'm committed to this place and this group of people, the planning can get really long term. And so, you know, some of the planning that I'm talking to these other libertarians about, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to try it. And when we get to this point, but like, these are things that we're thinking are 5, 10, 15 years out, you know, talking about what we can do together once we build up this, you know, this community of libertarians, our own wealth, you know, and the steps we need to take to get to these long-term plans. And that's something that I don't feel like you can really do if you don't have a lot of libertarian community and support around.
And this is the support that you need. These are the political libertarians sitting out there going, yeah, you're going to need us up there to make sure, hey, we may not be able to pass a lot of freedom laws, but we'll keep them from passing stuff that's going to screw with you.
Yeah, if we could just keep the government in check here. Yeah, exactly. It's just going to get worse everywhere else.
Belay the state.
Belay, indeed. Huzzah.
All right. Anything else you wanted to give out? Is there web pages?
I'm in construction. So if you come here, you know, contact me about any construction needs. But I also have liberty.menu. It's a directory website for libertarian businesses and events. So
awesome.
It works like Yelp. You go to http liberty.menu and and you can add your business for free. You can add events that are going on. But, you know, like I was saying, it's therapeutic to trade with people. And it's a global event directory, so you can do it in Arizona, but you know, a lot of listings are here in New Hampshire. But I encourage anyone listening, if you've got a business, put it on there. I think just once someone knows that you're out there, they're going to start contacting you, and then you can have those conversations. And if you're on there, if it were me and you had a, you know, restaurant or auto mechanic, and I saw you on there, I'm going to go to you for sure.
Absolutely.
And not only going to go to you, I'm going to try to strike up a conversation. I'm going to ask, you know, where's the owner? Where's Mark? Or where's the guy that listed on Liberty Menu? I want to talk to him and start making these real life connections, because the internet's done a lot for libertarianism, but you know, it hasn't brought us necessarily closer. And I think Liberty Menu is my effort to try to bring us physically closer.
Awesome.
And to trade outside of the state.
Is it just New Hampshire?
No, it's global. You can add something anywhere in the world. There's listings all over the world. The listings are free. You just have to renew them every couple of years. To make sure that the site's always fresh and showing the newest stuff.
That's first thing I'm going to do. Make sure we get on the list of, you know, the free, because that's what's important, is the community and the ecosystem.
Yeah, the ecosystem,
as to, you know, start supporting people for being libertarian. A lot of times they haven't been. You know, they couldn't be. You know, they're not. You can't. Let's say you have, like Free Talk Live. I talked to Mark about they're doing their marketing and so on and sales and business. I don't want my business advertised on that. So it's got to be the advertisers on the radio programs and the podcasts and, you know, the web banner ads that we do and everything. It's all the community supporting the community.
Totally.
So I'm just like, you know, making sure that. That'll get a lot of attention from me.
I'm thinking on the pirate site, man, it'd be a little thing on the side, friendly ports.
Absolutely.
Yeah, friendly ports, exactly.
There you go. Boom. It's
part, I mean, part of the idea when I created Liberty Menu was the idea was to also have a map where you could see where there's concentrations of libertarians. I had just heard of the Free State Project, but was living in San Diego and hadn't heard of Libertopia, which was an event going on in San Diego. And I thought, how the heck? I'm online. I'm looking for libertarian things to do, looking for how to meet libertarians. And there's an event in my backyard that I didn't hear about till like 3 days before it happened. And I thought, that's crazy. So I created the website, but I thought, you know, long term, that website, the more it gets populated, you're going to see where people are. And, you know, maybe someone's living in, Colorado or something, and they see that there's a bunch of libertarians.
Do you have
in Phoenix.
A reputation thing? Is it kind of like a Yelp deal or something?
Yep, exactly. So you can ratings, reviews, all that kind of stuff.
You know, Davi and I, we do the Pirates Without Border Letters of Mark and all that kind of stuff. We just did the last two and the new book published on Amazon and everything. And, of course, you can go online, pirateswithoutborders.com, Letters of Mark, and Reprisal. Now, Reprisal, her fourth letter, it's called Scuttlebutt. And it's on, like, you know, the Crown hates gossip and you go against their reputation.
So you know what a scuttlebutt is then?
Yeah, it's like gossip or whatever.
Yeah, that's what it means. But it was like it was the water cooler. It's where you got the water.
Yeah, it was it. You stood. Yeah, it was the water fountain.
Yeah, the water fountain on a boat. Cooler. Right, yeah, yeah.
The smartest guy at the water cooler kind of thing. Right. And so this is what we're looking at. We want to go ahead and I say on Scuttlebutt, what we'll do, we already put it in there. It's all about reputation. Not the man's libelous account of whatever, which, you know, that don't
or the
nothing.
Banks or
none of that. Well, we have one on the second letter, Captain Mark, is on cryptocurrency. The third one's on pirate communication, hailing frequencies invisible to the crown. We have one on the intellectual property. We got one on, you know, travel, the consent of the travel, on and on and on. But Scuttlebutt, when you're talking about what you're doing on this reputation Yelp kind of thing, that is exactly what this fourth letter of Reprisal, I want you to read it. If you already have that, we've been looking, we call them black papers, you know, it's kind of like a white paper thing. So we're just going, look, this is how we need to have to where, yeah, you got an ID. You want to have an ID? I give you an ID, but it's not a state issued ID. It's, I know you can call yourself whatever you want, but we know it's you and your reputation follows you by whom? It's out there. It's a reputation by others. So now I need to know the reputation of the people giving me a reputation. You know, if I don't have that, you know, they could be lying sacks of snot. So Scuttlebutt, the audience, you, I want you to look at this because this is exactly what you're describing of this liberty.menu, right?
Right. Yep.
Liberty.menu, this is what we've been looking for and perfect. What we hoped would happen, and we have it. If we can integrate that, we can get all kinds of pirate with you, man. Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we need to do and support ourselves.
This has been awesome. Liberty.menu. Patrick Bender, B-I-N-D-E-R, right?
Yep.
So Patrick and your wife Mari,
yep.
Yeah, Mari. And they had I remembered her name. There was something. It was a Marivalis or Mara something.
What does she say? You mean like she might have told you like Mari Safari or Calamari?
Yeah, Calamari. Like, that was
a mnemonic
what it was.
Thing you to know, remember her name. Yeah.
That's how I remember it, and then I forgot. Okay, but and Archer, are you planning on having more children?
You know, we'll see what the future brings us. I will say, if anyone's interested in like our rambling and our trips and their story of what we've done, I've kept some of it and cataloged it at bevoluntarius.com. So it's bevoluntarius.com. It's Voluntarius with a Y. And you can check out more of our stories and videos of all of our trips, our time in Jackalope, all sorts of things like that.
Awesome.
And I want to put one other thing out there.
Please.
Because one of my activisms here in Manchester is related to mesh networking. And so I've been working very hard for the last couple of years to get a decentralized internet access market going in this area.
Pirate communication.
And we're pretty close to it. Yeah, it's basically setting an encrypted internet here in Manchester with a marketplace so that instead of paying Cox, you know, every month for your internet.
Oh my God, we're going to be your new best friend.
Right, instead of paying Cox every month for your internet, you actually pay as you go to your neighbors. And it's a system called Althea, althea.net. Or althea.org. I think it's .net. And that's the system that it's going to run on. But if there's any techie types out there that want to get involved in something like that for their activism,
Derek!
Reach out to me, move here. Yeah, I know, but that's the thing. It's like, yeah, exactly. Too busy. Like some of the people that would be perfect for, they're like, I can't take on another project.
Well,
though.
What we've done is we've done IPFS.
And I was going to say his IPFS work is like, you know, that's great work.
Yeah,
that's the kind of thing that can run right
absolutely.
On top of a network like
well,
this.
Well, in Arizona, they have a mesh network, a lot of the hackerspace and so on, but they're not libertarian.
Right. So they're not creating a market. And so it's free. And so it's not incentivized and it's not
they don't
sustainable.
Know what they're doing it because it's cool. They have no idea. Hey, we did it for what?
And they want it to be free, but free is not sustainable. Free is not sustainable in any, you know, this is the stuff
that's
electricity.
Want it, to be
it takes
free as opposed to free and dumb.
Right, exactly. You know,
when they say free, oh, Linux, it's free. And I'm going, it's not free. I remember going to the Staples Hat Bay Red Hat, it was $70 of what the hell are you talking about free? No,
right.
Freedom. Oh, okay. Then you got to define which one they mean.
Right.
So I'm going, if it's free, it may cost, you know, a little crypto. So what happened? Everybody comes to my parties and so on, and they're like, hey, what's your Wi-Fi? I ain't giving you my freaking Wi-Fi.
Right.
So what Derek did, he set up this thing called a Boop, and you can see it. It's a Wi-Fi on there, and it costs crypto per minute yep. to use it. And it just goes in, and I'm like, oh, you can do that. But if you
he's done that at Porkfest a couple of years as well. Yeah, that worked out well. I've used it. You know, I used it at Jackalope, and I used it, his paywall for internet access. Yeah, it works
so
well.
So we're all over it, man.
Yeah.
I know. Derek, he's busy right now. He had a server crash. He's behind a keyboard right now. He
so that paywall thing is the Althea idea is just that it's all automated, and your router takes care of everything. You literally just put a little crypto on your router, and your router negotiates the price
yep.
and pays for it all behind the scenes, and it's all encrypted. But it's like instead of, like, I wouldn't say instead of the internet, it's part of the internet, but we're building up a decentralized encrypted part of the internet that includes a built-in marketplace for access to the greater internet.
I'm so hip. You know, yeah, Derek did it's that revolutionary. Like 4 years ago. You know, we've been doing that. He's busy.
Right,
we're
right.
busy. We've been, see, the big thing on the pirate thing was to create the foundational philosophical structure of this.
Uh-huh.
You know, the government is the crown. The crown always this, the crown always that. Screw the crown. We're going to belay the crown. I mean, you know, so this
the
is,
story.
We are, all right, we're going to be your new best friend.
Right.
We I'm spend telling more you time for together, a lot right? of things. And I tell you, you want to, man, you want, Ernie going to bring some, get some. But you find me a place that I can just build and the man is not freaking there. I got 18 wheeler coming. Okay.
Nice.
All right. We got it going. It's great spending time with you, Patrick.
This was fun.
We had a lot of fun. And Bob, you know, he sitting there listening, just, you know, he's smiling half the time. He's like, oh, I already know what's up. You know, so, you know, he's going to be a big ad and asset for you guys, too. Thanks for doing this. Peace.